Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined, as always, by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin, post-sabbatical, post-live in Louisville, back in the studio. And, boys, there's going to be a little rust. There's going to be a little rust to knock off. And as we were getting set to go, as we were kind of getting the technology up and running, there was a little bit of tension between Piper and Big R, in which Big R shared that he had never been in a fight. So I just thought this was fascinating, and I think, boys, if you are up for it, we need to find a sponsor to send us to the Stronger Man Conference next year so that a couple things can happen. One, Big R can learn how to fight, because obviously at every Christian conference there needs to be some just really good fighting instruction. I think that needs to be a part of it. And maybe we can get our boy in a fight, Piper, where he doesn't want to punch you through the phone. He wants to punch someone else. So what are the odds?
Odds are, if it's at that conference, it's going to be Ronnie rushing the stage to punch one of the speakers.
There's a very good chance of
or
that.
Or one of the worst.
Dude, seriously, though, at a conference like that where everybody's all, like, raged up already, you know what I mean? They're already kind of on edge. And it's kind of that tough guy moment where, like, do you ever have this experience, Piper, where, like, if you went to certain concerts, like in college or high school, like, all you would have to do is look at a guy funny and it would be on? I wonder if the Stronger Man Conference would be similar in that, like, you're walking through the lobby, you do that thing where accidentally you walk into the shoulder of another dude, and
quote unquote accidentally,
and instead of just walking by or saying excuse me or whatever, the dude turns and he's like, dude, what the blank is your problem?
You know, he gives you like the up and down look.
He gives you the up and down. You know, he gives you the, you know, roll up Snoop Dogg kind of look
as he's holding the message in his left hand.
He's holding the message, but he's holding it sideways.
Right.
You know? That's right. So, Piper, what's the over under on how long it would take to start a fight at the Stronger Man Conference next year, which we're all going to?
Well, for Ronnie or for you?
Let's do for me first, and then for Ronnie.
I mean, if you went in with that express intention, it would be like roll up in the parking lot, honk at someone for cutting you off, and like it's
dude,
go
yeah,
time.
If I was in the wrong kind of mood, because everybody wants to try a bigger guy, you know, everybody wants to try you anyway because you're bigger. So,
you've got glasses, like you've got this interesting mix where like you're bigger and everybody wants to try that, but you also have like the glasses and so they're like, how tough is he really? Because glasses are very confusing to people.
Dude, the glasses, the long hair, it would be very confusing. But I could be in a fight before brunch at the Stronger Man Conference.
Baby, now, I love how you're just assuming brunch at Stronger Man.
Dude, brunch
Stronger
is a
Man's,
part of it. Brunch at Stronger Man is a part of it.
To push against the title of Stronger Man. No, we're doing brunch today, fellas.
Dude, it's not going to be like quiche and rolls, though. It's going to be like, you know.
No, it's all dude, bacon.
It's all
literally
bacon.
It's just bacon-wrapped bacon, fried bacon,
bacon
on bacon. It's all
that. Are you going to slab of like raw meat to just gnaw on? There's just going to be like blood running down your face because of how masculine you are.
That's what Jesus did.
Let's bring it into the context of Big R. How long do you think it takes Big R to get into a fight, and what would the context be? Because I'm guessing in the kind of hipster establishments that Big R hangs out in, like where you're paying, you know, $74 for a donut and, you know, $110 for a microbrew, like there's not a lot of fighting going on in those places.
To be fair, you're really paying for the reclaimed barn door that the donut
is.
Oh,
got it.
On.
I would never eat a donut not off a reclaimed barn door. Are you kidding me? That's
yeah.
What
really,
am I, an animal?
It's not
you know, what am
donut.
I, savage?
Yeah, what are you like? What are you doing? Dunkin' Donuts now, Big T?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Like, let's do something that tastes like
Dunkin'
something.
Dunkin' Donuts is the White Castle of donuts. It's disgusting.
I love it. I love how elitist we are. Maybe being elitist in this way would get us into the fight.
I think that's it right there, Big T. I think that's what you're getting close now. I think it's just we're going to be sitting there with like those looks on our face,
dude,
and somebody's going to eventually
smug looks,
look over.
We're going to be making snide comments.
Okay, I figured it out. I figured out how Ronnie gets in his fight. I had two scenarios in mind, and I've settled on the second one. The first one was it would be not the first worship set, but the second, where he just couldn't take it anymore, and he charged the stage and just beat the guy over the head who was doing the splits in the air with his own guitar. So that was scenario one. That seemed a little bit outlandish. So the second scenario is Ronnie walks up to the coffee bar where they're clearly only serving black coffee because this is the Stronger Men's Conference. He asks for a youthberry tea.
That's not going to end
well. And the guy scoffs at him and says, "We don't sell that bleep here." And Ronnie goes over the counter.
That's, dude, he goes over the counter in his little tight skinny jeans, and it's on. You know,
chokes the guy out with his with the shoelaces
from his Chuck Taylors, his distressed Chuck Taylors. Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Oh, I love it. I love it. We got to find him another lightweight though, Pipe, because our boy is getting very scrawny, and I'm not going to put him in against, you know, somebody from a higher weight class. So we're gonna have to.
I don't know. Youthberry rage is not to be trifled with. That's true.
It's definitely not to be trifled with. And boys, the reason the entire reason we're talking about the Stronger Men Conference is that some of our listeners, we have the best listeners in the world, man. Our fan base is the best, and they send us funny things from time to time. And one of the things that somebody sent was a video that was taken at the Stronger Man Conference, in which it looks like our boy Ferdy was there in attendance. I haven't seen the video. You've seen it, Piper. Can you walk us through what you saw?
Well, it's a recap video, so you know it's like the highlight video of the whole thing. And to be fair, I didn't watch the whole thing, but our ingenious listener said it's at the 45-second mark when he shared it, so went straight there. And there's just like 2 seconds of somebody who appears to be, you know, beard, deltoids, all of it, Stephen Furtick, laughing uproariously in the audience. So like he's not on stage, it's not a green room, he's just in the audience. This is probably as normal life as Stephen Furtick gets. And then it moved on to, you know, boxing matches and, you know, wrestling bears and whatever shooting. Else they did there. So
Uzi shooting, Uzi time.
Rambo.
And I didn't see him the rest of the video. I'm assuming he wasn't wrestling bears. You know, he wouldn't want to get scars. That would mess with his preaching. So it was just that. I just found it fascinating. Well, A, great catch by the listener who found it. That means because it was a quick grab.
Yeah, that's huge.
I mean, that's CSI level observation right there. And then second, I found it fascinating that Stephen Furtick desires to be a stronger man in some way other than the weight room. Right.
Like it's like that he saw the lineup for that conference and he's like, you know what, that's something I need. I need to become stronger. And what's more fascinating about that, Pipe, is the fact that, like, okay, let's break it down a little bit. Real talk here. I think it is safe to say that the three of us, we each in our own distinct ways have very considerable egos. And I can't think of a lot of things that I would go to just as a fan. You know what I mean? Like you get to a certain point and it's like, I want to be there for a reason. I just don't want to buy a ticket and be a fan. But yet Ferdy, by all accounts, just bought a ticket to be in the audience at Stronger Man. My question to you boys is, what would you do that about? Like, what would you be okay just buying a ticket like the regular general public and just being a fan?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, like, aside from concerts and sporting events?
Yeah.
Conference specific
or author specific, something in our wheelhouse. Because, I guess concerts and ball games are the obvious ones.
I don't think I would pay money to hear someone talk.
I would not. There's not one person in the world I would pay money to hear talk. Not one.
No, I have spent, you know, since leaving home at 18, I have spent my life avoiding being forced to hear people talking.
And yet our lives still include a lot of that. So, like, why would we pay for it, you know?
Right. Well, and that's another reason is, you know, you end up at enough conferences for work reasons or publishing reasons or whatever, and all the more reason to not voluntarily inflict that
on
yourself.
Absolutely. Big R, what about you, man? What are you checking out as a fan?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't even know. I mean, I hate live concerts, so I don't even do that. I don't enjoy live music at all. It's not even paying the money. I just can't think of anything. I can't think of anything that I want to like go out and do, you know, like to that level, like I'll drag Big M to a movie because she's not really into movies. And every once in a while we go to a movie and it's like the highlight of the year. Right. Because, you know, we got out and we saw a movie, but like anything other than that or bigger than that, I don't even know. I literally don't even know. Cause I just don't really like whenever you're out and you're thinking, gosh, how great would it be if we just would have stayed home and like watched this at home?
Yeah, no, I know. I have that feeling often at concerts.
Like, dude, I would have like all my food. I would have like, you know, I would have this. I'd be all comfortable in my sweats instead of my skinnies that I have to wear right now, and be like super uncomfortable and all that kind of stuff. So I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm sounding like super old man and daddish with that. But I mean, that's just
I think we're all sounding a combination of old man and daddish, but also like super egomaniac old man. Because I think kind of what we're saying is we're too special for any of this stuff. And we would never just go.
Like, what we're saying is, like, we want you to pay to come see us.
I think what that means is we've arrived.
But we would never come and pay to see and hear you. But please, please continue to pay to come and see and hear us. Yes.
That'd be an interesting twist on Live in Louisville. If we just went to some – showed up at some random fan's place and just listened to them talk for like, an hour and a half.
Does stand-up comedy count as paying to hear someone talk at you, or is that kind of more on the performance?
That's more like a movie.
Because I think I would pay to go to certain stand-up –
Dude, I would pay to go see certain stand-up comedians for sure. Like, that's a fun experience. Like, I've done some of that in the past.
Yeah, I would do that far more than I would, you know, go listen to somebody, you know, scream at me about being a stronger man.
Dude, yeah. That being said, though, and I want to close the loop on this conversation. If you are a deep-pocketed sponsor type, and we know you're out there, our listenership is diverse. We are global. This is a global, worldwide corporation. So we know there are people out there with the resources to send Pipe, Ron, and myself to the Stronger Band Conference next year. So we want to be there. We want to be there. Intrepid reporters behind the scenes, kind of going rogue, kind of going undercover to see really what goes on at Stronger Band. So hopefully, boys, the three of us will be converging in beautiful Springfield, Missouri, which is just gorgeous this time of year. I mean, March, April, and Springfield, get out of here. You know, I mean, it's a destination.
I'm Ron considering another sabbatical around. There, baby.
Yeah, possibly. Baby, you're going to have to work that around your 11 like sojourn retreats and some of the pampering that goes on there. But if you can
I'm
make
thinking
the time,
about Springfield, yeah, I'm thinking Springfield. I mean,
thinking Springfield, yeah. Don't have to say yes or no right now, but just think about Springfield.
It's on the list. Springfield has always been on the list for me.
Always on the list. So, boys, speaking of egos and speaking of our business, Piper shared a fascinating tweet with us this morning, and it was by a guy who's like. Name I've sort of been aware of, I guess, for almost a decade. And this dude, his shtick is – his name's John Acuff. He used to be, like, funny Christian guy. Like, Christian haha guy was his shtick, like, a decade ago. And now he's, like, Christian marketing branding guy. And, Piper, why don't you lay that tweet on us, man? Just read it out loud, and I want to get y'all's responses to it.
Yeah, he well, again, this was shared by a listener with us, so credit where it's due. The tweet simply says, authors promote your books like crazy. You didn't spend years fighting the fears, doubts, and frustrations to let someone who has never written a book tell you that you're talking about it too much.
Nice. So here's the thing, boys. We have all written books. We've written several of them. I like writing books and I value writing books, but in no way, shape, or form do I think it's the hardest or most special thing there is to do. So I guess that's the first level on which I took umbrage to this tweet. Big R, how does this land with you, man? And then we'll ask Piper.
Yeah, I mean, is it Acuff? Is he the guy that wrote like the stupid things stupid Christians do, or
something like that? Yeah.
No, that's this podcast. It was called Stuff Christians Like, and it was just sort of like it was really clever and funny. Just sort of a look at like these really weird, you know, subculture-y things that happen in the white.
Yeah,
church.
Right. Okay, because man, that was a long time ago, right? So I don't know. When I look at a guy like Acuff, man, I just feel like there is this like self seriousness that immediately just I push back on, which is like, man. You got to take your art and yourself like so seriously. And the fact that like he went from like Fouks funny guy to like branding guy. I mean, to me, that's like, I just don't get the connection between like those two things, except for he's a guy that spends like a long time doing his hair in the morning kind of a thing. And, so like, I don't really get the connection with that. And the whole like, man, you know, you just got to get out there and don't let anyone like push against like the seriousness of what you're doing. To me, that's just like, oh, red flags just like popping up everywhere and just really not fun.
Yeah. Piper, I think I texted you after you shared that with me. Like in the span of a decade, Acuff has gone from Christian funny guy to Michael Hyatt. And I don't know. I guess not having paid it.
Well, in the decade prior to that, Michael Hyatt went from obscure executive at Christian Publisher to Michael Hyatt. So That seems to be the path.
Hold on, boys. I mean, like, I need education, man. I mean, tell me.
Yeah.
What is it? What does it mean that he's a branding guy? Because I feel like when people tell me that, I just think of them as being guys that take too long to do their hair in the morning. Like, you know what I mean? Like, everything's perfect. They're like these guys that are like super uptight, and like, you know, like when you, yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna go on and on, and I'm gonna offend a bunch of people, but it's just.
You might be reading a lot of music industry into this, because I feel like branding may have a slightly different connotation. A branding guy in the social media age is somebody who screams loud enough that they can help you get famous, that people
listen. But
who's
like Acuff getting famous?
Well, he's like writing books and charges thousands of dollars to speak to people about their brand.
I guess he's gotten himself
like
famous.
Go consult with business. Yeah, he's built his own fame. So yeah, he started with Christian Funny and then went into essentially books about chasing
your dreams.
You guys
should have said the word consultant, and then it would have made sense to me.
Yeah. So this is the guy who.
Sorry for leaving. I buried the lead.
Like, your corporation brings him in, and he like paces around on the stage excitedly in like an over the ear mic, and he's carrying like a dry erase marker and kind of pointing with it, and behind him is a huge screen with the word like ignite or, you know, inspire or whatever, like,
or stronger
man.
That's
one version. That's a little bit of like the baby boomer version. This is the overcoming your fears version. It's the vulnerable version.
So it's like the Rob Bell version of it. Is that what you're saying?
Dude, I hate the vulnerable version of that. I'd rather have the baby boom version.
I mean, I don't like either versions, because the first one's not inspiring and the second is pathetic. Right. But it's that version where it's much more like, you know, you're at your lowest, you've given into the man, you've whatever, and now it's time to start overcoming your fears and like you can do it. And it was a lot of this stuff, like fighting fears and doubts and frustrations. Like, those are all very real things. But like, it's just a bit disingenuous when a person builds a platform on someone else's.
But
fears.
Dude, where is he like, so is he just literally one of these like seminar dudes? Where's he at? Like, where's he at in terms of like, you know, theology? I mean, where's he at? Who is he?
Dude, he's probably nowhere in terms of theology, because that would exclude someone in the audience. You know what I mean? And I don't say that.
Hi,
in a
I'm John Acuff, and I am nowhere.
Well, when you're nowhere, that means you could be everywhere. You know what I mean? Which I think for a branding guy,
yeah,
is important.
He would be very. I mean, I don't know what he says publicly, because his branding stuff has moved away from being faith based. It's just very much more like the story of your organization. Okay. He has a book called like Punch Fear in the Face or something like that.
He should get Stronger Man's Conference.
He should.
So he's very like catalyst-y and sort of that. It'd be called like inspirational, self-helpy. Yeah.
Dude, didn't
leadership consultancy, even though he's works for himself. I'm not sure how you lead when you're self-employed.
Didn't our boy Donald Miller have the same arc? Didn't he kind of take this path?
That's what I was thinking about, Big T. That's what I was just thinking about.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the difference between Donald Miller and John Acuff. Now, I'll say this. I've said this on the podcast. I'll say it again. I'm so sad about the direction that Donald Miller took, because I liked it when he wrote about things of the soul. Because while I didn't always agree with him, thought I loved his writing. I loved his take on things. It was engaging, if not always something that I totally agreed with. Then he moved into this branding thing. Here's the difference: is that Miller used plot devices. Uh-huh. So this, you know, like the seven basic plot lines. To build a branding philosophy to help organizations like find the story that they are telling about their product. Like, it's pretty genius. Acuff is an inspirational speaker. He's, you know, he's like Matt Foley minus 280 pounds.
I have no idea anything you just said, Pipe, but I agree with you.
Do you know, are you familiar with Chris Farley? You know Matt Foley, the motivational speaker, lives in a van down by the river.
Yeah, it was more talking about Donald Miller's thing that I meant. Yeah.
Okay.
His plot lines, his story.
I work in marketing, and like he does an effective job of helping people communicate about what they do. Yeah. Like, that is marketing. Acuff does a really good job of helping people feel better about themselves, so they write books they should.
I guess that's
writing.
Marketing too, though.
Oh, it's marketing. It's just not a good kind.
Boys, one of Acuff's takes, though, in that tweet is this sort of, you know, reverential tone about writing a book and how it's the hardest thing and all this stuff. Which begged the question, and this is a big R question, what compels us to write? What compels us to write books and magazine articles? And I think there are kind of two answers to this. One answer is the very marketing-friendly version, the things that you probably tell your book publisher. But I think there's a deeper answer, and there are probably deeper motivations for the three of us. So, Piper, I'll start with you. You've written a lot, and you are in the book business on both sides of it. So what about you, man? What compels you to write?
I mean, it depends. If it's an article, usually it's just like it's an idea I can't shake loose. It's, you know, so it's the thing that I keep circling back around to, because we've talked about this on the podcast before. Like, if you are somebody who loves to write, you think in terms of writing. Everything, it runs through the filter of, is this an idea I could write? You know, so you hear a sermon, you read a book, you're listening to a podcast, you whatever. You know, you're watching a game, you're watching a movie. Like, they're just sort of, that's the filter. And sometimes something gets caught in that filter, and like, that's the idea you can't shake loose. Sometimes it's something that pisses me off, and so like I have to figure out, is that something I want to address? So it could be something theological or social or whatever. Sometimes it's something inspirational or reflective, but it just sort of it's that thing that gets caught in the filter. And if there's enough to be said about it, then it's a book instead of an article.
Big R, what about you?
Yeah, I like to create things, and I like to finish things that I create. I like I like the feeling of completion. I love things that start from nothing, but I love the feeling of finishing something, because I'm in kind of a business where nothing's ever finished. So there's whether it's writing or recording, there's something about like a book, article, song where that's it. Once it's done, it's done. And I love the feeling of that, being able to like have sort of like the like a finished product in my hand.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So yeah, so that's why that's probably what really compels me, I guess, to like do things of that nature. But yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, baby?
Yeah. You know, I think it's a combination of the two. I'm with you, Big R, in that I love the finished product. I love, you know, seeing a project through to completion. I think for me though, I like, you know, it's always more exciting in the creation phase, like in the early stages. Like, you have the idea and you're enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. And I love, from a writing standpoint, like I love feeling like I get a sentence right, you know, feeling like I say it in the best possible way that I can say it. So, you know, I think that kind of always keeps me going back as a writer, just on a completely, like, I guess, authentic level. I think I write for the same reasons I play sports, is that it does make me feel a little bit different. And I like that. I like that not everybody does it. So I guess that keeps me coming back to it. Trying to be special.
Until they start following John Acuff's instructions.
Dude, then everybody's going to do it, and everybody's going to feel super good about it, you know, because it's, they will have then done like the hardest thing in the world, you know? I mean, at some level, like, and I think the third way is like, I just discovered that I was good at it, and you know, you want to make a living, and you want to make a living doing something that you halfway enjoy and are good at. So, you know, I just kept doing it.
I have a question about what you just said, because you just used a phrase that I think is hard to spit out for somebody who's trying to balance like having a good reason for writing and being humble, but also being honest. And that is, I'm good at it. So it's like, that's a hard thing to tell somebody else. It's like, no, actually, I'm a good writer.
Yeah. Why is that so hard, Pipe? Why is it hard to say that? But I agree. I mean, I mean,
because we're allergic to bragging in an overt sense. We're not allergic to humble bragging, and we're certainly not allergic to self-promotion in some way, shape, or form. I mean, we sit here and bloviate on a podcast once a week with all of our opinions. I know. So clearly,
dude,
that's
my that.
Problem.
I love our hypocrisy in this. It just knows no bounds, and that makes me happy. But
So yeah. let's we also occasionally try to be a little introspective and honest. And so let's dig into our own hypocrisy. I am loath. Like, here's the thing. I read a Christian book, and 9 times out of 10, I think I'm a better writer than that guy or that lady. Now, 1 time out of 10, I'm jealous because they're a better writer than I am. But saying that out loud makes me feel like a real douche.
Yeah.
Does it make me one, or does it just make me feel
I think it just makes
like
you an actual, like, living, breathing, sentient human being, because who doesn't have those feelings? You know what I mean? I'm sure – look. You can look at all three of our walks of life, similar as they are. And, I mean, I bet Big R has that competitive feeling when he listens to somebody else in his same genre of music or whatever. Like, you hear a record, or in our case, Piper, you read a book. Or in my case, when I was younger, I would watch, you know, an athlete at my same position, and I would go, I could do it better than that guy. And that's why you work. That's what keeps you going. And I actually just read a great article by Chuck Klosterman, who's one of my favorite writers. I just sent this to you, Pipe.
Yeah, you emailed it to me like 2 minutes before the podcast.
Yeah, intending just for you to read and enjoy it, not for it necessarily to be something that we talked about on the air. But Klosterman's whole deal was that, like, you need a nemesis, and you need, like, an arch nemesis or an arch enemy in your life, like in your professional life, somebody to chase after. And I think the desire to be better is a real thing, you know. And also to your point, Piper, about saying – I'm good at this. It doesn't feel, I don't know, it doesn't feel braggadocious at all. In a way, I think it would be weirder for somebody who's good at something to, like, disingenuously sort of bloviate about how they're nothing special, because they're wrong. There's this great line in what was the David Foster Wallace movie with Jason Segel? The End of the Tour. Have you seen it? Have you guys seen that, either of you?
It's a
great movie. Great writer's movie. But, Wallace is riding in a car with this guy who's doing a feature on him for Rolling Stone. This guy's doing a profile. And Wallace is kind of doing the thing that we all do, which is to sort of be self-effacing, and he's charming about it. But the guy is basically like, you know, that's crap. People don't buy a 1,200-word novel because they think the author is a regular guy. You know, they buy and read a 1,200-word novel because they think the author is special. And you know, not that any of us are at that level necessarily, but I would argue that we all do this because we think we are good at it, or at least we think we're better at it than most people. Is that a thing that I should feel uncomfortable about, like feeling that way?
It just depends what you self-identify with, because I don't really I don't know. Like, I don't walk around. I don't really consider myself necessarily, even though I write a lot. I don't walk around like self-identifying as a writer. You guys, you know, and I'm okay with, like, kind of stepping back and going, oh, you know, that Big T, that Piper, I mean, yeah, those guys are better writers than me. Like, it's just, it's not like a thing that I hold really, like, close and treasured in terms of, like, a skill set that I've developed.
And yeah, but so, it wasn't your first vocational thing either. Like, this is sort of second career for you.
So, like, I can be, so, like, I don't hold it so tight. So, I'm perfectly, like, I would never read a book and go, oh, this is just killing me, because I wish I would have written it, or I think I can write it better. Like, in the sense that I might think I could write that better, but, like, it's not messing me up that I didn't write it, because I just think, well, okay, you'll do something else. I would struggle more that, like you said, Big T, with, like, songwriting or something of that nature. But yeah, writing, I'm actually, I want to keep sort of this loose grip I have over it, because I don't want it to be the thing I've become, even though I do more writing now than I ever have. And I do think I've, like, acquired some skill in it. Like, sure. Okay. Yeah. You know, but, like, it doesn't, I don't feel like it boosts me. I don't feel like boosted by it ever at all. I don't know, but that's just my experience, you know?
Yeah. Interesting. Piper, anything else to add to this discussion?
I have another question.
Yeah, lay it on us.
When somebody asks you what you do, Ted, do you, like myself, and Ronnie would be in the same camp, because we all have full-time jobs that are very easy to describe. Yeah. I'm a marketing manager. You are a professor. Ronnie is a pastor. But we are also all creative people who write books, write articles, make music. Do you tell people that you do those things, or do you just tell them your job?
I usually just...
And the reason I ask is because I feel so pretentious when I say I'm a writer.
Yeah.
Or even worse, I'm an author. That makes me feel like such a tool.
Yeah, it should. I think we should all feel like tools for saying that. But Yeah, I usually just tell them the day job. You know, I tell them, like, I teach at a college. You know, I teach at journalism at Union, and just let it go from there. And, you know, if they ask follow-up questions, I'll, you know, indulge. But yeah, saying I'm an author feels like it feels like some sad people that you run into at, like, writing conferences from time to time, and you know, they're the ones giving copies of their book out to, like, the waiter at the restaurant where they go to have lunch, and there's just a hunger there for approval that that probably deep down, like, I do struggle with, but it also makes me uncomfortable, like, uncomfortable enough to, like, keep it at arm's length, you know?
Yeah, but exactly. We refuse to claim it, even though it's there.
I don't want people to know that it's there, you know? yeah. But what about you, Big R? You just say pastor?
Yeah, I avoid any of the extra stuff like the plague. I mean, you have to literally drag it out of me. I mean, I just would never go there. Yeah. I just feel like you're just trying to be, you're trying to do the extra special, you know? Mm-hmm. And it feels embarrassing.
Yeah, it feels a little bit like claiming a status.
Yeah, you're trying to say, look, I'm not just so average. I also do this. So let me elevate myself just even an inch, you know? I'm not just that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it strikes me as this sort of persona curating that, like, I find insufferable on social media. So, like, why would I do it verbally? You know what I mean?
Right.
It just feels like a bad idea. But, yeah.
But promote your book relentlessly and don't let anybody tell you to stop.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Dude, does anybody promote their book relentlessly that we like? Like, what does that look like? I have a hard time, like, placing that in terms of people that I like. You know what I'm saying?
I think there's a big, big difference between sharing and promoting. Uh-huh. I think the people who we have an affinity for, who we would like to hang out with, are sharers of their work. They believe in their work. They stand behind their work, and so they share their work. Promoters are people who are kind of like, there's a big difference where they believe their work is exceptional, and they're selling their work as opposed to sharing. It's sort of like it's the difference between conversing and talking.
Yeah, and I guess as an author, and maybe this is like an antiquated notion, Piper, but you can help me out with this. Like, I always felt like it was my job to write a great book, and it's kind of technically somebody else's job to quote unquote sell it. In the same way that, like, if you go to the doctor, you don't expect the doctor to be, like, canvassing your neighborhood with pamphlets about his doctor's office. Like, somebody else is selling it. You know, somebody else is, like, doing the commercial, and, like, he has a job, and his job is to, you know, listen to your heartbeat or put the thing in your ear and prescribe some pills or whatever. But his job isn't to also be out, like, shilling for the practice. And I guess that's how I always looked at writing, but I think I take umbrage with guys like Acuff, because guys like Acuff put the onus of sales on my shoulders as the author, when I just think the onus should be write a great book.
Well, I mean, we'll get into the publisher weeds for a second, at the risk of boring everybody. But if you're interested in writing books, this is important. In the marketplace of books as it is, publishers can't sell books the way they used to. It used to be, publishers are still profoundly important when it comes to distribution and getting books into bookstores and Amazon and different places. But it used to be that if you got published, you didn't have to do a lot. If you had the capacity to do things, like you're a speaker or a pastor or whatever, like, that was a bonus. Now, one of the major decision-making factors in whether or not you even should be published is how much selling you can do.
Yeah.
It's the platform, which raises people with platform and no writing ability, and diminishes those who can write a great book and can't sell any, because publishers have to make money. So it's a catch 22, but the fact is that the onus does rest on the author to do a lot of the selling. And that is a perpetual tension that I feel, because I hate self-promotion in the promote-y sense. But I also know that I am sacrificing sales by not being a out and out self promoter.
Yeah, because the game changed so much. Like, what you said is really true, Pipe. Because again, what you used to have to do to promote your product was to go showcase it in terms of, like, hey, I'm going to do a book signing, I'm going to speak, I'm going to play a concert, I'm going to, you know. And now you're literally, because of social media, and because of the
because of brick and mortar going, you know, south, you are you're asked to promote in the ways that publishers used to assume the role of promoting your product. You know what I mean? So now you have to sort of be in partnership now, doing the same things that record companies, publishers, publicists, like when the onus used to just fall completely on them. Like now we have to share that burden. And and again, because there's different ways to sell things now, and the old methods are just fading away. It's kind of a bummer, especially if you love product, you know.
Well, and especially if you love to write. Like, I love social media, but I like the engagement and I don't love the platformy aspect of it. So I would love it if I could write a book and a publisher could just move tens of thousands of copies, or even like several thousand copies. Let's not get crazy here. Whereas it instead a publisher has a ceiling when working with somebody like me, because my name doesn't extend far enough to just sell copies. There are some people, you know, A-listers who they publish a book and there's enough people who just want what so-and-so puts out. But yeah, then it is a bummer, because I would love to write and then interact with people about what I wrote, but not promote what I wrote.
Yeah.
That would be the best way for me. And I think, Ted, you're probably the same way, except without the social
media. Yeah, exactly. I mean, my philosophy on all of it has always been, to whatever degree I can, I will say yes to almost any interview request or anything like that that comes across my transom. Regardless of the size of the publication, I'll say yes. But, you know, I will definitely not be doing any sort of personalized shilling on social media. So, and thankfully that's been kind of enough for a lot of the publishers I've worked with. And in fact, this little exercise of bloviating into our computers once a week has been in a way enough to placate them, because they see this as analogous to like having a social media presence. Like, at least I'm connecting with an audience in some way. Mm-hmm. And, it's been helpful. It's been super helpful, because this is a thing that I feel comfortable doing, whereas I don't feel comfortable, you know, bloviating about myself on social media. So like it's been a good compromise in that, because I feel like we're giving people something. I mean, you can argue about the value, but like people enjoy it. So like people enjoy it. People listen to it in their cars or, you know, listen to it while they mow the lawn or whatever. So we're giving people some value, which makes this a little bit different, and it makes it a little bit more comfortable, if that makes sense.
Makes sense to me. Let's keep podcasting and not.
Dude, absolutely, man. I feel like we solved some problems today. This is good.
Wow.
Yeah, boys. It's good to be back kind of doing radio in our normal context. As much as I like the live shows, like this has become comfortable for me. So this feels
right. Do you feel like you had your feet under you, Ronnie? Feel like you've found your stride?
Back at work, man. Back at the grinds.
Yeah, man. It's been a re-entry, man. I mean, you know how that stuff goes. So it's I'm just trying to get my feet back under me. I'm trying to get on level ground. Feeling a little rusty, you know, with the rant. I mean, that's all right. You know, we're all going to come back. It's all going to be glorious, like it was back in the golden age of HR. And we're going to get there. We're just working through some things, and we're gonna be better friends for it someday.
So we're gonna start you out with a little shorter episode today, baby. So I'm gonna draw this thing to a close. I don't want to wear you out. You know, your first time back. So we're gonna ease you back into this thing.
Thanks, baby. I appreciate that. That's kind.
No problem. I want you to be fresh and ready to go next week, and we'll lay a little bit more content on you. But boys, we've done what we always do on this program, in that we've wandered to and fro throughout these topics. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Hello, my name is Adam Comer.
And I'm Ryan Chittister.
And we're the host of Life After Addiction Podcast. If you or someone you love struggles with addiction, check us out, Life After Addiction Podcast, and you can subscribe at lifeaudio.com.